Good morning. Right. Okay. So, yeah, this is a bit of a continuation of the theme that we've been looking at over the last little while. Let me clicker. I must admit my heart sank when I looked at the first line of the information that we've been given, because it said, "This week is perhaps the most difficult one on our journey through the wilderness." So I thought, okay, I've drawn the short straw. We're going to end up very cheerful at the end of this, but we'll see. But we will be looking at things which I think in modern society today we tend to ignore. Pop the thing up, Sally. Nope. There we go, good. Okay, so, the third Sunday, and the cheerful verse is that crying is better than laughing. It blotches the face, but it scours the heart. So, we will be looking at things which we tend to ignore, certainly in our society today, and hopefully we'll find it helpful to do that. So, we started this kind of series by looking at how the Holy Spirit calls us into the desert that we might be transformed. We've spoken about how wilderness worship looks different from what you might call mountaintop worship. And you remember from last week, it might involve things like solitude, silence, and fasting we spoke about last time. But this week, we come to a bit of a stark truth that worshipping in the wilderness might also involve some sorrow. So we're going to talk about sorrow today. So the desert, the wilderness, is a dangerous place. I don't suppose that many of us have been in a desert or a wilderness. I certainly haven't. In our society, you know, in Worthing, there isn't really a desert close by. We tend not to think very much. And we may have a bit of a romanticised idea about what living in the desert might involve. I've often thought of John the Baptist sort of living out in the desert on locusts and wild honey and being in a very sort of wild man in a wild situation. But that's kind of guesswork on our part as to what the desert might be like. But in Bible times, there was no guesswork. They knew what the wilderness was like. They knew what it was like to be in the desert. They knew that it was a dangerous place, not just because it lacked food and water, but for many other reasons as well. Got this quote from Tom Wright, who, if you've heard of Tom Wright, he's a brilliant theologian of our day, very readable books, and he says, "The wilderness has become a haunt of wild animals. The desert offered criminals a place to hide and plot, and open spaces between towns and cities were lawless, dangerous places from which travellers would be eager to escape by scurrying into the next built-up area." So the desert was not a place that you wanted to stay in for very long at all. For these kinds of reasons, the wilderness, the desert, was feared. It represented four things. It represented the unknown, represented danger, failure, and most of all, mortality. And those are four issues that I want to take a look at next. But we will move towards what the Bible calls lamenting, and out of all that, we'll bring a bit of light at the end of my talk. Now, the unknown. Does anyone like uncertainty? No. I hate uncertainty. I hate it unless I know what's going to be happening. If I'm in a situation where I'm waiting for something and I'm not sure what's going to happen, I don't like it. I don't like sitting in here waiting for the time when I have to come up and do a talk. Once I'm up doing it, it's fine. But the waiting is the hardest thing of all, isn't it? That moment before something that you know is going to happen actually happens. Like waiting for a job interview. You know, like sitting outside the headmaster's study. You know, you're not sure what's going to be next. Waiting for the outcome of an exam. When I took my exams, when you take exams, there are some people who, when they finish their exam, they rush to the books to see if they got the answers right. I hated doing that. I just forget the whole thing and just put up with that terrible waiting period where you just don't know. So the unknown can be a scary place, and the desert, the wilderness, represented the unknown. It also represents danger. Now again, danger, we don't do danger in our society, do we really? You know, we're health and safety is the touchstone of everything we do in our society. Danger has been taken away from us. There's nothing awfully dangerous about getting up in the morning and coming to church. There's nothing very dangerous about most of the lives that we lead. It's often said that we cosset our children so much that they don't know how to cope with danger when it does eventually come. You know, we don't let them play conkers in the playground in case they hurt their finger. You know, it's true, isn't it? You know, health and safety has become so much of a touchstone of what we do that, you know, all the fun's gone out of life because there's no danger anymore. So we don't often face danger or risk. We've become a very risk-averse society. It's not all bad. In some ways, it's good. I mean, many of us have been to countries abroad where you see, you know, workmen up 25 stories hanging on with a bit of bamboo or something to build a wall. But we have become a risk-averse society, and it wasn't like that in Bible times. The wilderness, the desert, in many ways, was probably a bit like the Wild West. It was that kind of dangerous place, not the sort of place you want to be on your own. Well, if danger is fairly unfamiliar to us, the next one is very familiar, I think. Failure. Anyone failed at anything at all at any time? Yes, we all fail. We're very familiar with the idea of failing. We spoke last week about Jesus in the wilderness being tempted by the devil to shortcut that road to glory, to take the easy way. And you know, we often, because we know the end of the story, we know that he didn't submit to temptation. I sometimes think perhaps we misunderstand how much pressure that was. That it was a very great pressure indeed for Jesus to do all those things, to turn the stones into bread, you know, to jump off from the high building. The temptation was real, and he could have failed. You know, if it wasn't real temptation, then it wouldn't have been temptation. Jesus could have failed in the wilderness, but, you know, thankfully he didn't. But we do all know failure and what that means for us. Finally, in this particular section, mortality. In the wilderness, we become very conscious of our mortality. Now, I don't know about you, but whenever someone that you know dies, especially if it's somebody kind of around your age group, you think how easily that could have been me. And the older we get, the more aware we are that actually life is very short, and what we hold on to in many ways is held on to by a narrow thread. One day, inevitably, we will die. It's the, you know, it's the two things in life that are inevitable: taxes and death. It will happen. And sometimes, you know, when you're younger, you think you're going to live forever and you do all sorts of crazy things and it doesn't really matter and it's fine. But you become aware, don't you, later on. You become more aware of your mortality, not only of yourself, but of those that you love. And we like to brush these things under the carpet because we don't really like to think about it. We think about it for a bit when somebody we know dies, and then, you know, we get on with life and we have the stiff upper lip, the keep calm and carry on. We push these things aside. Even with God, sometimes we come to church in times of prayer not feeling great, but we try to sort of make it look as though we're okay. I think many of us have a kind of a Sunday face, don't we, that we put on to make sure that, as far as everybody else is concerned, we're okay. But actually, underneath, we might be hurting really badly. We might be aware of our mortality. We might be aware that we failed recently. But we very often keep that to ourselves, especially in front of other people. Would God want to hear about our struggles? Can we be honest with God about how we feel? It's interesting, actually, because interesting that we have some young people here this morning, because I can remember, it's awfully a long time ago, but I can remember when I was about, I don't know, 15, 16, getting terribly depressed. And I think a lot of young people do get terribly depressed. And it's not uncommon, it's quite usual. And so, you know, we perhaps think about the problems that we have as adults and the issues that we face as adults. But actually, for young people, those kinds of issues are very real as well. And we don't want to lose sight of them. But can we be honest with God about them? Can we come before God in honesty and say, yeah, I'm feeling terrible. This awful thing has happened to me. These kinds of issues are very common to mankind, to all of us. We experience struggles, fears, doubts. Doubts are very real. Disappointments are very real. Anger. We often feel anger. We often feel hurt. Probably fears, doubts, disappointments, anger and hurt. Probably all of us have felt some of those, if not all of those, in some measure over the last couple of weeks. And yet to try and ignore them, to bottle them up, to kind of think that God's not interested in them, just makes them more powerful in our lives and makes them affect us more. So how does the Bible deal with all this? Well, the Bible deals with it through something called lamenting. There's an awful lot of lament in the Bible. So learning to lament, it's quite a challenge, but something that we can do. The wilderness experiences that we see in the Bible teach us that God does hear. He does care. In Exodus 3, Moses is hiding in the desert. And he hears God say this, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers. And I'm concerned about their suffering. So Moses, God does hear the suffering of his people. He's not blind to our struggles or deaf to our cries. He doesn't consider it a lack of faith, an insult or a sin if we choose to be honest with God. We can tell him about our doubts. We can tell him about how we feel about things, about the state of the world, about the state of our own mind and heart. And we can share with God when we feel disappointed with him. I think the worst kind of disappointment for the Christian is disappointment with God. And I think I felt that at times, and I'm sure we all have. But we can tell God. He's big enough to take that. God wants his people to cry out to him in honesty and desperation. The Psalms, you know, the hymn book of the Bible, the Psalms are full of honest, raw complaint, sorrow and protest. And you've got Bible characters from the likes of Hagar through to David, from Jesus through to Paul, praying heartfelt prayers of distress. And these are called lament. Michael Card is a Christian songwriter, and he wrote this, which I think is pretty good. You and I were created to wake up in a garden. Instead, we open our eyes each morning to a fallen wilderness, a world where our omnipresent God seems disturbingly absent. God transforms us and leads us by his grace into a pathway back to his presence. This path is found in the language of lament. When we lack the language to articulate this forsaken, fallen struggle, when we long for the words to cry out our confusion and bewilderment, the Bible provides such a language for us. Lament is learned only in the wilderness. So let's have a look at some examples of lament. The first name that came to my mind when I thought about lament in the Bible was Job. And I'll just read you from Job chapter 6, a few verses. Job says this, if my troubles and griefs were weighed on scales, they would weigh more than the sands of the sea. So my wild words should not surprise you. Almighty God has pierced me with arrows, and their poison spreads through my body. God has lined up his terrors against me. A donkey is content when eating grass, and a cow is quiet when eating hay. But who can eat tasteless, unsalted food? What flavour is there in the white of an egg? I have no appetite for food like that, and everything I eat makes me sick. Why won't God give me what I ask? Why won't he answer my prayers? If only he would go ahead and kill me. If I knew he would, I would leap for joy, no matter how great my pain. What strength have I got to go on living? Powerful stuff, isn't it? That's Job. Another one is David in Psalm 22. And you might remember where these words were used again. My God, why have you abandoned me? I have cried desperately for help, but still it does not come. During the day I call to you, my God, but you do not answer. I call at night, but get no rest. But you are enthroned as the Holy One, the one whom Israel praises. Our ancestors put their trust in you. They trusted you, and you saved them. They called to you and escaped from danger. They trusted you and were not disappointed. But I am no longer a man. I'm a worm, despised and scorned by everyone. All who see me jeer at me. They stick out their tongues and shake their heads. You relied on the Lord, they say. Why doesn't he save you? If the Lord likes you, why doesn't he help you? The words that Jesus himself used when he was hanging on the cross. Jesus knew how to lament. And then Jesus himself, just a little earlier, in Matthew 26, verse 36. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee. Grief and anguish came over him, and he said to them, "The sorrow in my heart is so great that it almost crushes me. Stay here and keep watch with me." The Bible is just chock full of lament of people who are so in such a terrible state that all they can do is come before God. But the fact is they do. The fact is they do say these things before God, and he does listen. If you're looking for a modern example of lamenting, I very nearly played this song, but every time I hear it, it reduces me to a quivering wreck. So I thought I wouldn't. But as we're studying in the Lent course, Les Miserables, I dreamed a dream. That song is about as lamenting as it gets. There are dreams that cannot be, and there are storms we cannot weather. I dreamed a dream that life would be so different from this hell I'm living. Now life has killed the dream I dreamed. That's a lament. And, you know, we see lament everywhere. And sometimes we need to learn how to do this for ourselves, before God. And not be ashamed to do it. Because God does listen and God does hear. And he's big enough to take all of this from us. Some of us will come and whisper a prayer to God in our lament. Others might shout at God, say, "Why? Why have you done this? Why has this happened to me?" Some of us will listen to a sad song, like "I Dreamed a Dream." Some people might paint a picture that illustrates their pain. Some of us will shake our fists at God. Others will ask questions to try and understand what is happening in our lives and what's going on. The story of the raising of Lazarus is a good example of this. You've got Mary and Martha, two sisters, two very different people. When Lazarus, their brother, dies, Martha goes to Jesus and she asks him a very deep theological question. And Jesus meets her in that. He listens, and he responds with a truth that she can place her hope in. It's John 11, verses 17 to 27, and I'm just going to read that now. When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had been buried 4 days before. Bethany was less than 3 kilometers from Jerusalem, and many Judeans had come to see Martha and Mary to comfort them over their brother's death. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "If you had been here, Lord, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask him for." "Your brother will rise to life," Jesus told her. "I know," she replied, "that he will rise to life on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she answered. "I do believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world." A very, very theological question, expressing her faith so strongly in that way. But Mary is completely different. Interestingly, and I hadn't noticed this until today, Mary says exactly the same thing. "If you had been here, my brother would not have died." But mostly she just weeps. And Jesus is moved so deeply in his spirit that he weeps with her. It's always struck me as odd, because even though Jesus must have known what he was about to do, he was so sorrowful for Lazarus and for what had happened, and he wasn't afraid to show it. Even in front of all those people, he wasn't afraid to show it. There's this bit in John 11, verse 33. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. So Jesus knew how to lament as well. So, if you're like Martha, wilderness worship is a special kind of place where we can go, where we can be, and there's some benefit to being there. That's that verse. So wilderness worship is... Oh. Can you tap it for me? Okay, don't worry. Wilderness worship is a place for you to be honest with God. We don't find it easy sometimes to be honest about these sort of deep things. We can't spill our deepest hearts to just everybody, anybody, but we can to God. You can tell him how you feel. You can ask him questions. You can express your doubts and fears and anxieties. No matter how old you are, no matter how experienced a Christian you are, even if you're not really sure whether you're a Christian at all, you can still express all those concerns to God. And he can cope with it because Jesus has been through the process of being a man. He knows what it's like to walk in our shoes. Wilderness worship is also a place where we can weep. It's a place where it's safe to weep. It's not sort of the done thing to weep in public, especially for men. But actually I think it ought to be. There's no reason why it shouldn't be. And we can just let it all out, like Mary did. God stands with you, and actually he weeps with you. Doesn't put you to shame by saying, "Why are you crying?" He weeps with you, which I think is very special. And thirdly, wilderness worship can be a place where God shows you his heart for a situation that you might not otherwise have realized. In many of the lamenting examples that we've read in the Bible, many that you see in the Bible, yes, there's a time for lament, but actually, coming out of that, something different happens. Something changes. Very often, the Psalms start with terrible lament, but they end up with praise of God. Mentioned earlier on about Moses, when he was waiting for God to swear. He wasn't, didn't know he was waiting, but God was waiting to show Moses what he was going to do. Moses had killed that Egyptian, and Moses was in shock and he fled, didn't he? He ran away, and God met him and showed him how to provide a real answer for the Israelites. God may move you in some way to deal with some situation, to deal with an injustice, or to deal with someone's need. It may be that God can impress his sorrow for something on your heart, and then he sends you to go and do something about it. But all this talk of lamenting is quite depressing stuff. I think it's important, but I think in many ways it is a bit depressing. It's a part of life. But the great thing about the Christian life is that there is an end to lamenting. Lovely verse in Psalm 30. Weeping may last for a night, but joy comes in the morning. We're not promised a life free of pain and hardship and sorrow. For many of us experience more of that than others do. But we are promised that God holds us through those times of pain. I'm going to play a song which you may be familiar with, which reminds us that actually nothing can ever separate us from God's love, because at the end of the day, amid all the lamenting and through the lamenting, we actually belong to him. So if we can play that song, please, Tony.